Welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards. This series will question the assumption that people are psychologically broken and need to be fixed. We will talk about how seeing people as innately healthy will change all of your interactions and outcomes. This is a true paradigm shift, and it simplifies the entire process of dealing with mental distress and allows for more profound and immediate changes.
Aloha, and welcome to Psychology Has It Backwards, a podcast where you get to listen to everything we think about how psychology is coming from the wrong direction. So I'm Christine Heath, and I am the very fortunate person to have as my BFF and podcast cohort,
Judy Sedgman. And I'm delighted to be part of this because I think Chris and I just feel like we're a team, you know. Yeah. We get it with about each other, and I think Chris is wonderful, and I think, you know, this is so exciting to do this work with her so often, and so I can't thank you enough, Chris.
Well, I can't thank you enough, but the thing that I think is I'm the most grateful for is all you people who are listening to us,
right?
Because we've had so many people call us and tell us that just by listening to our podcast, their life has changed and they're happier and how beneficial it was for them. So honestly, what can you ask at our age to do something where you get that kind of feedback?
Right.
I mean, we're so grateful for all of our, I guess it's not a viewer, it's a listener, because we, are grateful to be able to share what we share. But I think the thing that's the coolest about it is that we learn as we do it. So right. I feel like we're just, I mean, we started doing this 40 years ago, and yet I'm like, oh, this is so cool. We're just learning and seeing things new. And you can't really say that about a lot of professions after you've been doing it for 40 plus years. You pretty much know what you're doing, right? And that's why people retire and get away from it. But we're always learning and seeing things differently and deeper, and that's the gift of this work, is that you don't get bored with it. So today, last week we were talking about what do you do if you're talking to somebody as a coach or as a therapist and you don't like process their problems, you don't go over all the details of their life ad nauseum, that you are not fixing what's wrong with them. So then what would you do? And we realized that when we got done talking, we spent the whole last episode talking about how what that means to really focus on what's wrong with people and why what we're doing is that wouldn't look like a very smart thing to do because people are innately healthy. Right. Then we realized we didn't ever get to talking about what do we do. And we thought that might be helpful. So today, that's what we're going to talk about, is what do we do when we are with people and we're helping them to get better if we're not talking about what they're upset about? And that's kind of the, you know, the thing for me anyway, is that I do a lot of training with graduate students, and it is a trip, I'll tell you. Sometimes they will sit and talk to somebody about what's going on. I'm like, why are you talking to them about that? That is the reason that they're here, right? Like, you don't sit and listen to men who beat up women talk about how one of the other therapists was mean to them. Because in all likelihood, because you know the other therapist, that never happened, right? And so by engaging and listening to that and trying to be supportive and caring and loving, you're actually creating a reality in that person that seems more real to them. Right. So it's very different what we do. It's very different. It's really so out of the box in terms of traditional work. There's a lot of people that mix it around, that kind of do a combination, but when you really start to see that people are healthy, you can't mix it with something that looks at people's problems and what's wrong with them. Because if you do, you're going to be confused yourself, and the person that you're trying to help is not going to get anything from you. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we really spend time listening to people to see what they need to see differently about how thought and consciousness create their experience, how that spiritual energy of mind comes through them and is their kind of their balance point, you know? So if they're a pendulum, it's like the top of the swing of the pendulum, that we're always attached to that feeling of well-being. So if you know that about people, then when you're listening to them, you hear something totally different. You're hearing, oh, that's really your health talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's really their health. Like they made it through that traumatic experience and boom, as they're telling the story, you can hear how they survived because they were listening to their wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the session, when you're helping people to see that they have everything they need inside of them, they feel more at peace, they feel better, and you also feel better, which is the perk for this work.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, and just one last thing before I'm going to let Judy give her, in Hawaii we call it your mana'o, is your your spiritual wisdom, is that we're here to teach people how it works that they're creating their experience, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And if a person can see how it works, then they can make their own changes. Otherwise, you'd have to be walking with them 24/7, telling them what to do and how to see things differently and how it works. But once you see like, oh, this is just thought, or this is my emotions coming out of my thinking, people are able to take charge of their life and they're not, as one of our clients said, their thoughts don't take over and run the show.
Mm-hmm.
Because truly that cannot happen. You can stop, you know, like if you were driving your car and you stopped hanging onto the wheel, you'd crash because that's what cars do. But, you know, the thing is, if you don't want to crash, you got to keep your hand on the wheel and keep driving the car. So you have to be the thinker. And that's what we do really in therapy when, because people frequently come to us and say, oh, I can't do this or this happens to me. I'm never happy. And we don't like, I mean, sometimes we might be very tender with them and it's okay. And sometimes we might not be. So there's no like techniques, right? Like the rest of the world has their little techniques and interventions and ways that they process everything. But we're just like right in the moment. What will help this person in the moment as it comes through me? And so what you say and do in the moment is sometimes startling to me. You know, things that I do.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just seeing that there aren't techniques and rituals, but you are always showing people how it works, how their innate health works, how thought works, how consciousness works, how it all works together in the moment. And so that's what we do. That's what we do all day long, is mm-hmm. we just help people to see the simplicity of it and the ordinariness of it. Mm-hmm. And that's starts to wake them up to their own personal power.
You know, for me, one of the very first things that I was told when I was learning about this was the deeper you see it, the more you can count on yourself to get through to people. And if you, to the degree that you get it for yourself, it becomes obvious what other people are doing with their thinking. And to the degree that you're caught up in your own thinking, you're thinking things like, oh, I've had that thought, or, you know, yeah, that happened to me. I was mad too, you know, and it makes us empathetic and, you know, maybe, you know, understanding, but it doesn't help the client. It just, you know, leaves you thinking, well, I can really relate to that person because, yeah, we've all been there. And maybe you can encourage them by saying, look, I felt just as bad as you felt and I feel better now. But until they see how that happens, where it comes from in them, all they can sit there and think is, well, good for you, you know. And I in the beginning, I thought, what an amazing kind of profession to be in, where the better you understand it, the better you feel. I mean, that it's like, how could anybody turn down a job like that? It's like, And it's true. It's true. Like year after year, you go, wow, you know, you see something and you think you see something. Then you see a client and you say, oh, that's that thing that I just realized. You know, that's going to help them. So it's kind of a partnership in learning that we learn with ourselves and with each other, and we learn from and with our clients. And sometimes clients come out with these incredible, really amazing insights, and they don't even know what they are. You know, they'll sit. I've had clients say things like, you know what? I just started to think, you know, maybe it was because I started really criticizing myself when I was in high school. I never felt good enough. And I got into that habit of thinking, well, that's an insight, because they're seeing it had something to do with them. It wasn't because they weren't confident or they weren't good. It was because they thought something. But they don't realize that's an insight, and they'll just keep talking. And, you know, one of the things that we'll do is we'll stop them and say, wait. Did you hear what you just said? And they'll say, yeah, I told you about high school, you know, and no. What did you say? And if they can remember it, we remember it if they can, but better if they do. And they'll say, well, I started thinking bad things about myself. And then I say, I would say something like, well, what's the point you missed? I was thinking. It's not like you changed into this awful person in high school. It's like you started having negative thoughts about yourself, and then you stood in front of the mirror and took them seriously. And you don't have to do that. And that's like, sometimes that's a wake up call, and sometimes people just brush it off. But you keep finding, I feel sometimes like I'm a, you know, I used to live in Florida, and we used to look for pretty shells. Every time you go to the beach and you're down by the water, you keep your eyes on the sand where the water comes in and look for unusual shells, and you find them. And I feel like that's how we are with our clients. We're waiting for the pretty shell. And when it comes up and the client misses it, you have to say, wait, stop. Let's look here. Here's that shell. Look at that. That's so different. Because people are innately healthy. I mean, that's the proof to me, is that they keep saying these very wise things, but they don't know they're wise, because to them it's just another thought. They haven't learned the difference between the experience of having an insight and yapping away about your past, you know?
Yeah, that's really true, isn't it, Judy? That's good. Yeah, it's the experience of having an insight. Mm-hmm. Because you can intellectually have an insight, you know, like when you figure it out, 1 + 1 = 2, it's like, oh, it's always 2. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But that's different than the kind of insight we're talking about. It's like we're talking about seeing from within. So you see that it's just thought.
Mm-hmm. And it's kind of natural, I think, for people to see it, but they'll call it out, but they don't know the meaning. They don't know why that's important. Mm-hmm. So they'll say, well, I keep thinking this, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And you realize that that's their problem. You know, they're always thinking this, and the other thing. Mm-hmm. And they're taking it to heart, but they're just thinking they're telling you their story. Mm-hmm. But they're telling you that they're the thinker. But they don't know it themselves. They do know it deep down, but they don't know it. So, you know, as people start to slow down a little bit, you know, we keep stopping them and saying, did you hear that? Did you notice what you said? I just heard you say this and such. Kind of slows down the barrage of negative events and series, and they start getting more reflective, you know, because they start realizing, no, I didn't realize I said that. Oh, no, I didn't notice that. I just, you know, and I've had people say to me, well, I've always said that, but you haven't heard it. That's the difference. And so we have, I've come to realize that people, honestly, that they do have innate health, and their innate health is always kind of trying to break through, but they're not slowed down enough to be grateful for it, to see it. You know, and part of our job is to, you know, point to things that they're doing that are right. Not, you know, even in the depths of, you know, really in a very bad situation that people can get in mentally, there is something in them that saves them, that tries to save them. And I remember, I mean, this story is stuck in my mind for years, and you may have heard it before because I think it's been told often, but my first teacher in this work was Bill Pettit, who was a psychiatrist. And prior to getting involved in the principles, he'd been a Navy psychiatrist, and he was stationed on a submarine base. And so he told about this one patient that he had, was a woman who had two children, and her husband was a submarine person. And so they would go out back, this is back during Vietnam, they would go for like 6 months underwater, and you wouldn't know where they were because they can't tell you, because it's a national, you know, it's national defense, and they can't contact you. So you don't, you know, for 6 months, your husband is gone underwater somewhere. And so she found out she was pregnant right after he left. She hadn't known that she was pregnant, and he was gone, for all these months. And then their tour got extended for a little bit, and he wasn't coming home, and she had the baby. And she was just overwhelmed with this baby that he never knew anything about. And she went into a deep depression when she came home from the hospital with these two children and now this baby, and she didn't know where her husband was and blah, blah, blah. And she was just, you know, wildly depressed and just felt like she couldn't take care of the babies. Her neighbors were worried about her. And one morning, her neighbor from next door came to check on her, and she was sitting in the middle of her living room floor, wrapped in a blue blanket, holding the little baby. And her neighbor said, "What are you doing?" And she said, "Don't talk to me like that. I'm the Virgin Mary." And she honestly had a psychotic break, mm-hmm. where she became, in her mind, the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. And the question is, like, what is the one thing the Virgin Mary would never do? She would never hurt or kill her baby. And this woman had been thinking about killing her baby. Mm-hmm. And Bill said, that's an example of the fact that mental health will find a way, you know, to break through everything, to try to get you to do something that's going to keep you from doing the thing that's going to hurt you. And I've seen that again and again, usually not in such a dramatic fashion, but I've seen it again and again in people where they will, you know, come up with something. Like, I had a veteran one time that was had gone through several programs to stop drinking, and each time he failed. And he was being sent to a VA program, and he was determined. He'd been in my group for a while, and he started to see he really wanted to feel better. He really wanted this to work. He really wanted, you know, the service to give him credit for the fact that he was recovered and he could go on. So he went to this program, and the first night of the program, the woman who was teaching it said, "Well, don't worry about it if you fall off the wagon, because everybody does it. And, you know, if you fall off the wagon during the program, we'll just bring you back and get you fixed up, you know. And so don't worry about it. It happens to everybody. Just, you know, don't think about it." So he goes home. This is the first weekend of the program. He goes home and he thinks, "Well, I'm just going to drink now and get it over with." Because I've got this 8-week program, and what if I fall off the wagon in the 7th week and I lose all that benefit? But if everybody does it and I do it now, then I'll have 7 weeks to get better. Now, that's not really stupid. You know, that in a sense is the best thing he could come up with, because he was so determined for this program to work for him. And she had already told them, you know, she's the authority figure. Everybody falls off the wagon during the program. Don't worry about it. So he thought, I'm going to do it early so that I'll have all these weeks to really get a benefit from this program. So he goes back to the program the 2nd week, and he's very proud of himself because he's had this bender and he's, you know, been drunk for a few days and he's gotten sober. He's come back to the program. And she says, "Well, why did you do that?" And he says, "Well, you said everybody goes off the wagon, and I thought I'd just get it over with." And she said, "That's the dumbest thing I ever heard." And he was devastated. And because like 2 days later, he came back to my group and he told the group this story. And of course, the guys all thought it was hilarious. and he said, "You guys are laughing," but he said, "It made sense to me." And I said, listen, let me just, everybody stop laughing. And let's just see if it does make sense. And I pointed out, like, if in your mind it's going to happen, and you have been through this group, and so you know that you're the thinker, and your thinking becomes your reality, so now you've come to believe in your own mind because this person who's in charge of the program told you that this is going to happen, common sense steps up and says, well, get it over with. You know, let's do it now, because then it won't happen again, because it only happens once, you know, in the program. And I said, you know, so he was kind of set up in a way to make a decision like that. And to him, it made perfect sense. And it really wasn't stupid. It was his wisdom doing the best it could with what it was working with. And honestly, sometimes it's funny like that. But when you can point that out to people, he was so relieved. He said, oh, so I'm not stupid. And I said, no, you're not stupid. I said, you know, we get in certain states of mind and wisdom does the best it can, you know. And that's how it works. Sometimes we come up with ideas that in retrospect maybe weren't the hottest idea we ever had, but at the time it made perfect sense.
You know, I think that the other thing that we do, just as you're talking, is that we tell a lot of stories.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we do.
And we tell stories about hope. We tell stories that kind of give a point, that make a point, that mm-hmm. through the story, people start to hear how they think. Like, we had the guys in my violence group listen to the videos that Louie and I did. And in one of them, I told the story about these three guys that robbed a bank and they got put into prison for 15 years. And at the end of 15 years, they got out. And 3 weeks later, they robbed the same bank in the exact same way and they got caught again. And they thought that was hilarious. And I said, you know, it just shows you the power of your thought, because, you know, for 15 years, they were sitting talking about how those were really good ideas. And if it hadn't been for blah, 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 it would have worked out.
Right.
But, you know, it's kind of like you take stories of real life things that are happening and that exemplify how thought, consciousness, innate health, how it all works in people.
Mm-hmm.
And the other reason we tell a lot of stories is because when we're telling the story, people are listening instead of processing. So yep. If you think the point of therapy is to process, we think the point of therapy is to stop processing.
Yeah.
Which is very different from mm-hmm. traditional therapy. And people who have had lots of therapy come in and they want to process the heck out of their lives, themselves, what's wrong with them, why they're this way. This one particular client that we have, it's like, why does this keep happening to me? Why? And that's just your intellect, you know, trying to understand something it doesn't understand. Because you can't see the way that thought works.
Mm-hmm.
So we tell lots of stories. We might do things that are kind of, in other ways, unexpected. You know, we might go for a walk with the client. Mm-hmm. We might, you know, it's like you take a look at where the client is at. If they're so agitated that they can't listen, then you do whatever comes to mind about what to do to help them to slow down, to be in the present moment. You might get up and have a cup of tea. You might, you know, say, well, just hang on. I just remembered I got to get something. And you leave the room and you come back, because while you're gone, you're clearing your mind mm-hmm. so that you can come up with a different way of seeing that client mm-hmm. that will help you to see how to help them.
Mm-hmm.
So you're always going back to your health as a therapist or the client's health. So listening is one of those things that, as a therapist, nobody taught me to listen. Although everybody I know that was a therapist thought they were listening.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, I thought you have to listen to your clients, but I thought that meant that you had to listen to all the stories they were telling and their past and all the details of their life. And let me tell you, after you do that for a while, you kind of want to go to sleep. And that frequently happens with therapists. They're sitting there and they go to sleep because they're just lulled to sleep by all of the details where there's no life energy. Mm-hmm. What we do is we connect with the life energy in the person. Right. That's very different. Yeah. And then we see what to do.
And that's a really profound point, because most of the time, the real problem that clients have is that they're not connected to the life energy. That they don't, that's what the principles are pointing towards, is that, you know, before we form thoughts, what we have is just the pure energy to do that, that is always flowing through us. And then we create a form with it. But that form lasts as only as long as we keep looking at it. In other words, if you don't think about a thought, it's not like the thought's hanging in the air there saying, notice me, notice me. The thought is gone as soon as you stop thinking it. Or if you see it differently, or if you just decide it's not worth your time. But that's a decision that has to come from another thought. You know? And that thought is going to come from a slightly better state of mind than the first thought came from. And so when people keep retelling the same thing again and again and going over the same old sad story, I mean, I've had clients that have come in and said, well, I've been seeing counselors my whole life, and you're new, and so I'm going to have to tell you all this stuff again. And you can tell they don't want to do it. They're tired of it. But they have decided, because of their experience, that it has something to do with what's going to work for them in therapy if they can just find the right therapist. And honestly, I've had clients who have just cried with relief when I've told them, no, you don't have to do that. I mean, I want you to tell me what's important to you, what's on your mind today, but you don't need to start from I was born. This is the story of my whole life. And usually people will say, well, I had a terrible childhood and, you know, there was a lot of alcoholism in my family and I was abused. I don't need to know like how many times and by whom and when and where. You know, I just need to know that that's something that's on their mind, that they've had that experience and they're still thinking about it. And I think sometimes I used to work with prostitutes, and the prostitutes we had different clients with different counselors in our group that would see people at different times. So we weren't always the same person seeing the same person, because it was hard to work out the timing. And so I'd have somebody come in and go, listen, I can't do this again, because the last time I was in with a session, the person was asking me all about the Johns and where did they come from and what do they want and what kind of things did they make me do in the car. And I just don't want to talk about it. I hate it. And I said, okay, listen, I know what prostitutes do. I don't think you need to tell me the details. You know, I don't need to know what they were wearing and which position they put you in. I know what they did. And I know that you didn't want to do it. And I know that they force you. And I know that there's a pimp standing there waiting for the money. So that's all I need to know. That's not a good life. Let's just stipulate that's a terrible life. And they would say, oh, thank you. You know, because that's why they're looking for help, is they want to get out of that life. So they don't want to have to keep talking and talking and talking about it. And that's not going to get them out of it. It just cements it in their memory. So then I would say, well, what did you dream about when you were a little kid? Like, what did you think you were going to do with your life? And then some people would say, I don't know. I used to just think about being a happy person, or I think about being a teacher, or I think about being a nurse, or I think about having a family. And I go, well, you know, those thoughts haven't died. You know, you can have new thoughts. You can think about, depending on whether you still like those old thoughts, but you can make up other things that you might want to do. And then there's look for the path. Well, nobody wants an ex-prostitute. The secret word is ex. That's the past. You don't have to relive the past. You don't have to even talk about the past. You just start fresh. That's the point of this program, is to give you a fresh start. You know, you've gotten your hair done. You've gotten, you know, into a nice, comfortable home. Your health has been taken care of. And now we're going to set you free in the world to be the person you want to be. And your pimp's in jail, so don't worry about it, you know. And they couldn't believe that I didn't think that it was a stigma on them, that they spent how many ever many years. And I go, like, you know, you had a really bad first job. That's all I can tell you. But you don't have to live that your whole life. That's not your definition of who you are. And then when we get to talking about who people are, they are that essence. They are that beautiful feeling, the purity of the moment before thought, when it's just pure energy of life.
That's really beautiful. I think we should just end it there. But I'm thinking,
maybe part two of this would be a good thing.
Gosh.
part two. But there's other things that I can think of that are really helpful to people when they're like, if I'm not going to process problems, then what do I do? And the question would be, and the answer would be just go in and wing it.
Yeah.
Wing it and talk about what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And help the client to see what they know.
Yeah.
And then it grows from there.
Yeah, and the truth is, the more we know, and knowing does not mean intellectually. It's not like we've read 17,000 books on the principles and now we know it all. It's like the more we experience the beautiful feeling that is that moment before thought, that quiet. As Sid calls it, the stillness of your own consciousness. That the more we can see it in clients, the more we can see when they're missing it, and the more we can bring that feeling into the session, the confidence we have that they're fine. And that's the other thing. You can't tell somebody they're fine if you don't really think they're fine. You know?
Right. Well, I'll tell you, most people that are traditionally trained wouldn't even think of telling people they're fine.
Right.
That's what they figure their job is to help them define fine.
Right.
But, you know, that's the thing about it is that when you know, that's different than, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Right. And that keeps you looking for it, feeling it, sharing it. It's all about that.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Okay, boys and girls, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Aloha.
Bye-bye.
We hope you heard something new and that you will continue to join us to challenge the prevailing thinking about the possibilities for health in everyone. To subscribe to the podcast, visit our website at psychologyhasitbackwards.com.